Jennifer Wong is a seasoned engineering manager who started her journey in civil engineering. The fast pace of the tech industry drew her in, and she stuck with it for years since making that call. In this episode, I chat with Jennifer about her transition from a non-traditional career path into software, reasons to take on management instead of being an individual contributor, and why taking the road less traveled in terms of career progression might just be the recipe for long-term growth and success. Enjoy this episode of the Work On Him podcast. I am your host, Den Delamarski. Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of the Work On Him podcast. And it's another week, another wonderful guest. Today, I have Jennifer Wong, a senior engineering manager at CrowdStrike, a self-taught front-end engineer at that. So we have a lot to talk about. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me, Den.
I am very much looking forward to learning more about your career, because your career journey is nothing like any typical software engineer. So tell us more, like what bootstrapped your interest in the industry? Because you reached a pretty, I want to say like high level, right? Like senior engineering manager. That's serious. That's a serious job. How did you get there?
Yeah. So I guess starting at the beginning of my journey, I was a civil engineer, also got a master's degree, which I'm very much using in mechanical engineering. And while I was doing civil engineering, I just saw a lot of the work and projects that I was doing take so many years. And so that's what interested me in the tech industry, was trying to get into an industry where things were more fast paced, where I could see the work product much more quickly. And so the way I got into tech was starting out in customer support, which is a pretty interesting way to get started. And from there, like you said, just started doing a lot of self-teaching, building silly websites in order to learn front-end development. Took a couple of short classes to learn JavaScript, and before that, HTML and CSS. And just moved from the support team to the web development team from there, where I was working at the time. And yeah, I don't know, management always interested me. And so that was kind of the journey to get there.
Civil engineering, that seems like there's a lot of contrast in between kind of the tech space and civil engineering. And part of it, as you said, is the velocity. But what was that breaking point for you where you said, you know what, this is it. I have to break into tech. I have to try and get into something that's a little bit more fast paced.
I don't know exactly. This is kind of, it's an interesting story. There wasn't necessarily a breaking point, but I think I could see the way some projects could be run given the right amount of budget, unfortunately. So the big project that I saw kind of get completed very quickly was the Yas Marina Hotel, which is actually where one of the Formula One races happens in Abu Dhabi, which is an interesting like connection back to CrowdStrike. But that project, you know, we worked on it, we did all the engineering, we worked with several architecture firms, we worked with several contracting firms, and that project, of course, got done very quickly because of the budget and the sponsorship from the Sheikh. So that, seeing that and then watching, you know, something like residential buildings in New York have to go through this like entire long permitting process and doing much more simple engineering on that, I was like, but things could go so much faster if we could just be a little more efficient. And I want to see my work get done. And I think that's just that contrast was put me onto the road of like interest towards something that, as you mentioned, had faster velocity.
And in that respect, you mentioned that you started with kind of being a customer support engineer. Like that was kind of your, I want to say, gateway into the tech industry. Why is that? Why was that kind of the point where you use it as a kind of a leverage to get into kind of the engineering roles?
Yeah. So the other thing that made me want to leave civil engineering at that time was that I felt I wanted to work more with people. I wanted to have more interaction with people. When I was working as a civil engineer, most of my interaction was either with my coworkers, and we were a very small firm. I think we were about 30 people at that time. The other folks that I was interacting with were those other architecture firms and contractors, but those would come and go just depending on the project you were working on. And so I was like, what job are you going to have to interact with people all the time? And it was customer support. So that's what I decided to go into. And I figured it was also an easier way to get my foot in the door to an industry that I had never been a part of.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those contrasting views once again, where you mentioned you wanted to work more with people. And there's a few engineers that I talk to and they want to avoid working with people because, like, I just want to write code and not talk to anybody. And in your context, you wanted to have more of that personal kind of touch to what you're building. And if I read correctly, you also at some point wanted to focus more on kind of the UX side of things. Is that right?
Yeah, that is correct. I was also interested in user research. And at that particular time, I was looking to make a career switch. It was difficult to get into user research. And I would say it was kind of a burgeoning role at tech companies at that time. But it's a similar thing. It's kind of, you know, the research of people for the products and websites that you're building for them. And I think customer support is more of kind of like a tactical role of you do a little bit of user research as you're learning from them and helping them out. Yeah, that's, I mean, I just ended up there instead, partially because of difficulty of getting into a user research role, especially without the background of like a humanities background and understanding psychology, I guess, is a lot of what it's focused on.
Right. And as far as I know, also for a lot of the research roles, I at some point contemplating the same kind of transition, because, like, that sounds great. You know, you get to talk to people, you get to ask about their problems. But it seems like, unlike a lot of other parts of our industry, there is a lot of requirements to have that formal piece of, I guess, like the education, which is like, oh, you need to have a PhD and like HCI. And I was like, oh, I don't think I will do that. That sounds like way too much, and I can grow in many different ways. Was your thought process somewhat similar, or was it some other motivation?
Guess it was a little bit of that, where I didn't want to go back to school. I already have a useless graduate degree. So I didn't want another one of those. And I think also just, you know, that velocity piece. I was ready to move on and do something new or something different. There were times also where I was looking into, you know, horticulture. I was looking into entrepreneurship, but in like the food space, like all kinds of different things. I just wanted to do something new. So I was looking for the fastest path.
Civil engineering, then customer support engineering. What was kind of the next, I want to say, step where you're like, all right, and now I want to do front end. Why front end? Why the web?
That got started because I had a friend who was a fashion designer, and she actually made her own website, just a simple kind of front end HTML, CSS driven site, no JavaScript, no animations at that time. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. You just built that yourself. And I just got interested in that. And so I took a short class. I think the total of the class hours was about 12 hours to learn how to build, again, silly websites. And I was like, this is pretty cool. That's kind of what I wanted to do. I was like thinking, especially with this customer support background, that going into front-end development was like a way of helping your customers. You know, like as a customer support person, you rely a lot on the engineering team. You know, you pass down that information of like, look, it's really hard to reset your password. As a customer, we get these complaints all the time, but you can't make those changes yourself. You don't have the power to do that. And so that's kind of what I was looking to do, is like, how do I take what I'm learning in customer support and then make an impact for the customers that are calling in?
I really notice in our conversation that your approach to thinking about a lot of the engineering problems or the product problems is very much customer centric. Like, I am solving a problem. I want to solve a problem that folks have. And in the engineering space, again, the common trope is like, well, we want to build things because it's like cool stuff that we build, right? It's like, is this feature cool? Yeah, it is cool. Let's do it. But people don't ask often, it's like, well, who is this actually helping? What does it solve? And it seems like for you, that mindset is there. Was it something that kind of got ingrained in you from the customer kind of support engineering role? Or was it something that comes to you more naturally?
I would say it's a little bit of both. I think going into customer support, you build empathy for your customers, especially if you see multiple customers having the same problem over and over again. It's frustrating for them, but it's also frustrating for you because you're like, if we could just solve this problem, there would be so many less phone calls and emails and customers would be happier. And then on the other side, I think I would consider myself like an empathetic person. Like, I feel for people all the time, and helping people is something I want to do. It's something that I think comes from my family. It comes from my background, and it also comes from schooling as well. I think I may have mentioned in the past that I did a lot of volunteer work, whether it was selected and chosen or required from the schools that I went to. And so having that mindset of service has always been a part of my life, I would say.
And that probably also helps you in the current engineering role, because putting yourself in the shoes of the customer, again, it's not a common trait. And I remember thinking back a few years back when at Microsoft, there was a VP that at some point decided, like, you know what, for the next year, I'm just going to do customer support. Like, I will literally join the support org and try to work with them and see all the rough edges. I think nothing builds empathy better than actually working with people that use your stuff, because I feel like developers, product managers, designers, they often are so kind of insulated in their little world. It's like, oh, we're going to put this Figma mock and then somebody's going to go and write the code and throw it to the wall. And like, now it's great. You know, we got a good TechCrunch article out of it. But once you start seeing people using it and running into the problems and trying to figure out like, well, what does this error message actually mean? Like, I have no idea how to solve this problem. I think it's a different class of empathy that you build by seeing that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think you make some great points. And there were a lot of conferences and discussions at the time that I made the switch to tech, where folks were like, customer support is where it's at, and everyone should do a turn in customer support so they really understand the people that they're building things for.
How was your transition from customer support into front-end engineering? Like, was it kind of just a changeover in roles at the same company? Were you looking for other opportunities? What was that journey like?
Yeah, it was a changeover within the same company. And to be frank, it was extremely difficult. I think as a self-taught engineer, you just don't know the things you don't know. And a story that I like to talk about is my manager at the time said, hey, can you build an autocomplete on this form, the login form, or I forget exactly what it was, but it was to autocomplete an email address that the user was inputting. So I started building that from scratch. I was coding this autocomplete, writing every single line of code to like run through the alphabet, run through numbers, and then I started to show my manager after, I don't know, maybe a week or something. I was like, okay, so I've got like the first two characters, but then I don't know where to go from here. And he said, oh, you can actually just look for an open source autocomplete and use that. And I was like, what is that? And yeah, I had no idea. So I think that's a good example of just not knowing what you don't know, especially if you're teaching yourself, is what things are important, what are the things to look up. And you part of it is you have to learn from experienced folks, and then also you need to just gain that experience. So it's this weird cycle of like, where do you start on the chicken and the egg cycle?
Where did you start on your self-taught journey? Because to me, that is one of those areas where if you talk to folks that want to break into the industry, and a lot of the folks that are listening to this podcast are either new to the industry, or maybe they're trying to break into tech, or they're trying to make the transition. And oftentimes there is this idea that, well, I do need to have formal education in, I don't know, computer science, computer engineering, whatever, to be in the industry. And that's not true, because you can teach yourself literally everything that we do in tech. Can be like, you can watch a bunch of YouTube videos, you can read a bunch of books, you can go to the library, pick up some resources, and become proficient. Like, what was that for you? What resources did you leverage? How did you structure your learning process? Say, okay, I will prepare myself for this next step in my career.
I started out, I think, just looking at resources online. At that time, also boot camps were a big thing that I also looked into. And for me, that wasn't really feasible, given you would have to take time off of work and you would also be paying. There are some boot camps now where it's an apprenticeship and they help you with your expenses, and then they actually pay for the tuition through the companies that are sponsoring. So that's another option now. But at that time, for me, it wasn't. So starting to look at, as you mentioned, resources like courses online, pulling up, you know, books, borrowing books from folks. The other thing that I had a big advantage of with working in the industry already in customer support was, you know, I sat in the same room as the engineers. So if I was working on something, one of those silly websites I was building, I could just walk over and ask them, oh, how does this particular thing work, or can you help me debug this? And that was a huge advantage, was just the exposure to engineers and watching the way that they debug things was super helpful. Some of the other resources that worked really well for me too is, like, a person who likes learning in the classroom, was Girl Develop It meetups. That's actually how I learned JavaScript. So over a weekend, I forget what office we were in, but we were in one of the tech offices in San Francisco, and there's a whole class of us all learning JavaScript together. We were learning JavaScript with other women in the industry. And that was great, because you also make those connections in the industry as well. And you get a support group out of it too, because you're working with people who are trying to break into the industry at the same time. So that's another thing that I leveraged as well.
So it's that tacit knowledge also that kind of comes from groups of people that are trying to address, I guess, like tackle similar challenges, similar career aspirations, similar projects. It's definitely one of those things that is a bit underrated. And then, you know, as you start working, then you realize that, you know, if you start reading articles and looking at books, there's only so far that it can get you before you kind of need that knowledge of other people and seeing how people actually do it. Because what you just said resonates so much with kind of my experiences as well. It's like, I thought I knew what I was doing a little bit, and then you start working with the people in your team and you're like, nope, what I was doing was completely stupid. I should not be doing that. That was like, I felt stupid so many times after talking to like people more experienced. I was like, why was I even doing this? Like, this is absurd. But I would not have known that unless I was in that group of people. Like, I've never found any decent documentation on that. There's no videos on it. Nobody explains this to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really helpful to have a bit of a network and also not be by yourself as you're trying to struggle through this, because it is difficult. It's a path that is possible, I think, for a lot of people, but it's hard. I spent nights and weekends learning these things, and I leaned a lot on friends that I met through Girl Develop It or Women Who Code, just to commiserate on the difficulties we're having, and even the difficulty of moving from customer support to web development. even that was hard within the same company where I was. So I would say a lot of it is luck based and timing based too. So I think, you know, a big piece of advice I provide to folks is don't blame yourself. It's probably not your fault. There are always things you can improve about yourself or the things that you know, but sometimes it's just dumb luck and timing.
And you mentioned the transition was challenging. What were the biggest, I want to say, kind of roadblocks or barriers that you had to overcome as you were making this changeover?
In the first couple of roles that I had, I probably needed more mentorship from the folks that I was working with. And given at that time, we were still kind of in that startup mode where folks were moving really fast, trying to focus on their own work. I don't think I had kind of the mentorship or the sponsorship that I needed as a new developer. And so again, kind of, you know, it's going back to that piece of like feeling a little bit isolated and trying to make sure that you have the network that you can learn from. I think that would have helped me a lot and really helped accelerate my career. You know, I did what I could and learned what I could on the job, but there are some times where you just feel like I should be putting out product at this point. I should be able to just be putting out features, but at the same time, you're still learning and you're still so new. So having coworkers that are willing to spend the time with you, to spend an hour here and there to pair program with you, I think would have been vital for me. And I was not really getting that.
I think you had an article that you wrote some time ago that was talking about the junior developers, and what you just mentioned is so key to any successful team that hires junior developers. And then kind of the way you framed it was that you have to be able to invest the time into helping those engineers ramp up. If you just take an engineer and you just throw them into kind of deep end and be like, go figure this out. And if they're like a senior or staff engineer, they'll figure this out. Somebody that's just coming into the role, it's so much harder that if you don't have those resources, you just should not hire like junior engineers, because you're setting them up for failure. And in your case, what was that support model for you? Like, were you actively seeking it out yourself? Like, were you looking at your manager, the kind of the meetups? Like, who would you bounce ideas from about like the challenges they would run into? Like, who was that support network for you?
My coworkers, when they had time, where I would essentially round robin all of my questions across the coworkers. So I wasn't just focused on one engineer to help me out. And also my network as well, either from previous roles or, you know, from those meetups, folks who are more experienced or maybe the people who were teaching at that time. The other thing that I was doing, and to be honest, I mean, being out of engineering and in management for so long, I don't actually know, but if this is still the case, but I was also going to hackathons. So building out a network that way was really helpful too. So I could, you know, message folks that I had just met, be like, hey, can you help me out with this problem? That was another way that I was getting answers or to my questions. I guess that's pretty much everyone that I was talking to at that time.
In this case, how long did it take you to build that, I guess, like confidence in your skills? Because that's a question I get asked a lot. It's like, well, I've been doing this for a year and I still feel like I don't know half of the stuff that I need to know. How long did it take you to actually feel that, okay, I know what I'm doing. Now I can kind of fly solo, if you will.
Gosh, it took probably 5 years for me to really feel confident. I think what really struck me was when I started asking more questions about decisions being made and then realizing that my question was valid and that my ideas were correct versus what was being planned over certain projects. And I think that really helped me understand that I know what I'm doing because I know what questions to ask. And so being able to kind of poke holes in senior level engineering's plans or senior level engineer's plans was really surprising to me, because understanding, I guess, the balance and the give and take of different decisions that were being made was really what instilled in me that confidence.
Yeah. The key part of what you're just saying is asking questions. And folks often are afraid to ask questions because there's that, again, kind of misconceptions like, well, if I ask questions, that makes me look like I don't know what I'm talking about. It's like, why are they asking all these questions? Why do you keep? And the reality is that you do have to ask questions, because that's how you poke holes in somebody else's ideas. That's how you build your own knowledge. There's no way around it, right? Like, you have to ask questions.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's so interesting, because when you ask questions, you kind of get down to the nitty gritty of why someone else is making a particular decision. And sometimes it's just because they want it that way, or it's just out of convenience for that particular engineer. A good example of when I felt very confident was we were doing, I think, time zone calculations. So we were doing time, essentially, calculations to display for a customer in a UI. And the backend engineer I was working with said, oh, you should do all those calculations on the front end and manage all of it there. And I was like, are you sure about that? Because, I mean, JavaScript is notoriously bad with time. Shouldn't we be getting time perhaps from the server passed up to us instead? And I wasn't sure. I was like, I think that's correct, but I don't actually know. And then I talked to many more people about it, and they were like, oh yeah, you should not be doing that calculation on the front end. And I was like, okay, wow, I guess I was right. And that was really so surprising to me. I was like, oh, okay. So I was asking the right questions. I had the right idea in mind, and I was on the right track. And I think that's one of those stories where I was like, oh, maybe I do know what I'm doing.
Ask questions. That's a way to that's the way to go. I love it. Now, you're in management now, and that is a whole different can of worms compared to even like engineering or anything else. What inspired you to kind of get on that track? Because, you know, the more I talk to folks about the transition to management, the more they think about this as like, well, you just become the therapist to your team now. That's your job, instead of writing code. What was the motivation for you?
There's a few different things. So the journey for me is kind of funny, where I go back and forth between wanting to work more with people and then wanting to be more technical. And so I feel like I kind of swung the pendulum again, where I was like, I'm ready to do more work with people. So that was one thing. And another thing was, I could just see there were a lot of issues with the developer experience at the different companies where I was working. And I spent a lot of time kind of building consensus with engineers to make centralized decisions for the entire engineering team. And also just meeting up with engineers while I was doing that. So having one-on-ones with engineers and understanding their problems and how to solve those things. And I realized, oh, this is kind of like a little bit of management work, or even program management, where you're working on things like work process. And so because I was kind of already doing a lot of those things, I was like, oh, maybe I'm actually more interested in management than I am in engineering, and hands-on, on-the-ground tactical engineering. And so that's what caused me to start to look into management, was like, how do I essentially help raise the voices of engineers, and also, to be frank, have the power to make those decisions and make things happen. I think it's so tough when you're an individual engineer to push for change. But if you have all the engineers together, you know, with your manager as kind of that centralized speaking piece, then you can make those changes happen. And so that's what made me want to go into management.
Was there any mentorship or some kind of support that helped you guide yourself through these transitions? Because it feels like, from my perspective, that it's, you know, making the call to go from IC to manager, like I'd love to bounce some ideas with somebody that's actually like a manager. Like, was that your experience as well, where you had somebody kind of help you guide through this or navigate the change in responsibilities or even the scope of responsibilities? Because as you just said, like, a manager is responsible for much more than an IC. When you're an IC, you're like, you build a feature here and there, and now you're responsible for the success of your entire team.
I think kind of similar to making the transition between customer support and front-end engineering, I also built out that network from all the folks that I had worked with in the past and trying to make career decisions, essentially. So starting off at a particular company with my manager at the time, letting them know I'm interested in management and kind of talking through what those differences would be like, but then kind of expanding that network to other managers that I knew at the company, and then managers outside of the company, managers at future companies, etc. And I will say also that when I was making the transition into management, I was still sort of making a decision about where I wanted my next career path to go. And so I was looking at program management, product management, and engineering management all at the same time. And so I just pulled everyone from my network and was like, hey, can you spare 30 minutes to chat with me and tell me what you do at your job? I just want to understand what the role is like at different companies, because that's the other thing, is the role is going to be different at every company where you work. And if it's going to be something that I'm interested in or that I think I could potentially be good at. So I had a lot of those conversations. I give huge credit to all the folks who helped me out and spent the time to talk to me, because that really helped me on my journey.
It sounds like the theme of this podcast is make sure that you build a support network, because the more we talk about it, the more crucial it seems the role is of having those different diverse perspectives in your kind of career decisions or the navigating the different career transitions. Because if you're solo, there's just so many things that can go wrong if you don't know the right perspectives, and people can help with those. In terms now of your change to management, when you first made the jump, were there any memorable experiences as a new manager that's like, I just started and this is something that caught you by surprise, or maybe something that you did not expect to happen as you became one?
One thing that was very surprising to me was, so I started the role, and I think this is true of like any time you start a new job, you come in fresh, you want to really make an impact as soon as possible. And so that is what I did. I was like, here's all the things that are wrong. Here's all the things that I want to fix. Here's all of my proposals. I'm ready to do all of these things. And I think I was really struck by the fact that it's like, no, it's not that easy. You still have to build the rapport. You have to take it one step at a time. And the biggest surprise around that was, I remember talking with, I think, a senior director, and he was like, you know, honestly, every manager comes in like that. They come in and they're just like stomping on the ground, ready to make, you know, change, ready to do a whole ton of things. And we're used to that, but unfortunately the change doesn't happen that fast. So you have to kind of take a step back, spend more time listening, absorbing information, doing this, you know, kind of like a on the road tour, so you can understand where all the problems are. And also, if those problems, if other people had already tried to fix them in the past, and what solutions they already tried, because you may be suggesting something that already got tried 5 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 years ago as well. And so that was kind of surprising to me, was I was ready to kind of take that power, but it's not that easy or that fast.
So it sounds like the power that you get with the title is actually earned with time through the title, not necessarily just given, which makes a ton of sense, right? Because if you work with a team, I don't think a lot of people would enjoy working with somebody that just kind of, you know, rules by mandate. And it's like, okay, here's what you do. That makes perfect sense to me. And like in hindsight, like I've had managers in the past that would do that. And that was the thing that I was like, Oh, okay. Yes. I see how that goes. And kind of it changes the dynamic, I guess, in kind of the collaboration mode, whether the team wants to work together or is like, okay, well, let's just hunker down and write this code.
Yeah, definitely.
I love this conversation, and I want to wrap up the show on one final question that is doled out to every single guest on the show. And that is, if you have one piece of unconventional advice to share with somebody that is listening to this and thinks, wow, Jennifer is inspiring, I want to follow in those footsteps, what would be that unconventional piece of advice from you?
Don't take the easy path. I mean, actually, I guess that's not super unconventional, but I think look at all the paths in front of you and really choose the one that's going to work for you. I think there are so many paths that people have gone down that are well tracked. And I think it's okay to make a decision that's not like everybody else's and to kind of forge your own way around your career, because you'll land in the place you need to be. And if you look at me, I've been in so many different careers, so many different jobs, so many different companies. And somehow, I don't know, I landed on my feet. And I believe that's true for everyone. So don't be afraid to make that leap. If it's not going to work for you, then fall back on the thing that you know that you understand well, and then try again. Try another path or try that same path over again.
Don't default to the easy path. That's wonderful advice. Jennifer, this has been great. So many gems that we shared. If folks want to follow more about the work that you do, where should they go?
Oh man, I have not been on social media very much recently, to be honest. But if you're looking on social media for me, you could find me either at My Blue Wristband or Jenzor, JENNZ0R is probably where you'd find me in terms of handles.
And we'll make sure to also include the links in the show notes. I'm with you. I haven't gone to Twitter for like a year or two because Twitter X, whatever it's called this week. we'll include the links in the show notes, so make sure to check it out. And I love the domain for your own website, which is Mochi Machine. I think that's fantastic. That's such a good name.
Thank you so much.
Jennifer, thank you for being on the show. It's been great learning from you.
Thank you, Dan. It was great to have a conversation with you.